Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Designated Driver Podcast. I am Marcus D. Wiley. Want to say thank you so much for those of you that downloaded, uploaded, whatever type of load you do. Thank you for loading it with me. I'm excited about every show, but I'm super excited about today's show because I have some of my favorite individuals in the room. A Riding Shotgun. It's my pastor from the Word of Restoration International Church.
Yeah.
None other than Apostle Dr. Charles Everett Perry. What's going on?
Marcus, I'm glad to be here, man. I am honored to be here with you today.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you. How you doing? Everything good?
Everything's good, man.
We're on looking top. Good.
Well, you know, we're doing our best.
That is. That is. My neighbor, my friend, we grew up together playing ball. He is now the illustrious, that's what they say at most churches when they introduce a pastor, the illustrious pastor of the New Faith Church, none other than Dr. Andre Germain Lewis.
What's up, Mark?
What's up? Well, y'all better loosen up because I'm coming at y'all. I don't care nothing about the clergy right now. What up, Dre? You all right?
I'm good, man. What's up, man?
Y'all, let me tell y'all something about Dre. Dr. Dre is a home builder. In the backyard. If you want a nice backyard, patio, pool, deck, all that, he is your man. COVID has taught this boy how to do a bunch of stuff. What else have you added in the backyard?
Just change the fence around.
Thank you for being
I
here.
I heard that.
And then my room dog came from Florida, Milton, Florida. Got here in the seventh grade. We played ball together. This was my first college roommate. He was my barber. He was my bodyguard. But now he's the pastor of the Fellowship of Love Church. My main man, Pastor Lorenzo Cottrell Ewing.
What's up, man?
What's going on?
I'm in the building.
Yeah. Everything good?
Everything good.
How's that 13-year-old daughter now?
Man. She's growing. Yes.
Are you feeling like you have to fight and the guys? Oh, he got your bag with you. Yeah. He like you, Apostle.
Got to keep the bag.
Keep a bag. Well, man, y'all ready to get into it?
Ready, man.
Let's jump into it. Let's get into first things first.
First things first. First things first.
I'm going to start with you, Dr. Dre. I want to know when and where and how did you get called to preach?
New Faith Church, 1997. Yeah, 1997 is when I got called. And it took about 3 years for the process, but during that Better Way Basketball League, when we were kind of doing the basketball and doing the Bible studies, and we were just kind of having dialogue, and over a three-year period, I ended up going from the court to actually teaching. And then teaching kind of, you know, put in me this desire to kind of want to know more and hear more about God. And then I just started feeling this shift.
Yeah.
And you know me, I didn't start nothing, but I'd finish it. And so that mentality started shifting.
Okay.
And so that's when I started noticing that God was really doing something with me, man.
Now, you was not a member.
I was not a member.
You were just over there for the basketball.
I was over there for the basketball.
And you heard?
And I heard clearly.
Clearly. So this is what I want. This is what I'm going to get into. You heard clearly. The voice of who?
Clearly the voice of the Lord.
Okay, the voice of the Lord.
Not Muhammad. Not Buddha.
Now, how did it, was it because, and we'll talk about it more, but was it a voice? Was it a sign? Was it a, like, what did your call sound like?
So mine's wasn't like an audible voice.
Okay.
Mine's was more of a series of various events and confirmations over a period of time. It was just a constant movement of people just confirming, you know, hey, something is on your life. Hey, you need to do this. Hey, you know what? You do well at this. Hey, you know what? We want you to pray. We want you to do this. We want you to do that. And everything was kind of gearing and pulling me as much as I tried to pull away from it. Okay. It was pulling me back into church. Now, I have a really good story, but I'm going to save it.
Okay.
Because the first person really that I think put a desire for me to really want to teach and preach was the way that they carried themselves. And he's sitting over to my right.
I ain't gonna talk much about it, but we go way back. Okay.
And so, he kind of put a desire for us, me and two other guys.
Okay.
He put a desire in us because of the way he carried himself.
Well, let me ask the guy to your right, which I didn't know this story, but he's my pastor now.
Heard that.
Apostle Perry, talk to me. I want to know when, where, and how did you get called to preach?
Well, Marcus, church I grew up in, Dr. Leon Ford, Wright Grove Church. Mm-hmm. I was always active. Had gotten saved at 10, was baptized, and so was always active in church and doing things, kind of like the junior leader, always speaking out, you know, giving the summations of the Sunday school lessons, all of that.
Yes.
And so at 15, at 15, I got called to preach, and I'll tell you what happened. But when I got called, I wouldn't come forth. And the reason I wouldn't is because there was another young man. His name was Roosevelt Woods. Mm-hmm. He was a teenager also.
Okay.
And Roosevelt had confessed his call to the ministry. So I didn't want to look like I was coming behind him, you know, like a Me Too. I didn't want to start a Me Too movie. so I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
It was 3 years later
when
I was at my dad's church right next door to where we are at Palestine. And we were going out of town on a church van. Mm. We had went to Six Flags, I think. Okay. And we were on our way back. And we were all on the van. And I had a dream. Mm. I had a dream. And in the dream, I heard the Lord tell me to preach the gospel. Go preach the gospel. And Marcus, all of a sudden, when I accepted, it was like everything just stopped. Yeah. And I woke up from the dream, and everybody on the van was asleep. And so I came back, and I told my dad that I had been called to preach. Mm. And that was in 1986.
So you got the call on the van.
On the van.
On the church van. On the church van. On the way to Six Flags.
on the way back.
On the way back. On the way back.
On the way back.
Okay. Man. I got that pen. My man, let me see if he's getting ready to lie. Well, not lie, but speak things that are not as though they were. Pastor Ewan, talk to me. When, where, and how did you get called to preach?
Man, I don't know about the how part, but I think I can communicate the when and the where.
Mm-hmm.
My first year in college,
okay,
as you know quite well.
So far,
correct. I was pretty wild.
Come on.
I grew up in the church, family of pastor preachers, daddy pastor preacher, uncles pastor preachers. So I understood preaching and pastoring well. I knew that wasn't something I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to play basketball.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I was good at it.
Yes, you were.
I was all right at
it. Good jump shot.
And so that summer going into my sophomore year, one of my good friends, Pastor Terrence Johnson, received his call.
Yep.
And I had a Me Too moment.
Okay. Okay.
I did. And knowing his track record, knowing how he lived.
For sure.
And I remember trying to go over to his house, and we wanted to go out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, we were trying to go to Carrington's.
Carol's. Come on, Carol. Oh, man.
Yeah. We was trying to.
Y'all trying to get killed. Real talk.
Don't park.
You want to park parenthetically?
No parenthetically parking. And so watch this. And so we came over to his house to try to get him to go to the club with us.
Okay.
And he wouldn't open the door.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm in there studying. What you studying, man? Study later. We tried to go to the, and he wouldn't go.
Okay.
It happened about 2 weeks or two times in a row. And I was like, wow, this thing is like, this is real. And it kind of began to marinate with me. Like, if this dude can do this.
Yeah.
And accept this and embrace this and be disciplined, I wonder what God can do with me.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I came back that that sophomore year that you know quite well. And I think everybody in the room probably know the story.
No, I'm going to tell it again. But continue.
I still need to be paid, man, because you're using me.
I'm not using but you. That's
my life. I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying. And so that sophomore year, man, I didn't hear a voice. There were a series of things that happened in my life. But more than anything, like Paul would say, you know, I can't boast in the gospel. Yeah. I'm compelled.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I am there. There was a compelling that I could not. I couldn't help myself but talk about it. Couldn't help myself but to think about it. It dominated my thought. It dominated my behavior. And so, I didn't fight long. I didn't do the 3-year fight, man. I just kind of, you know, I gave into it.
You did.
And you were there to be a recipient of that call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, man, for being, you know, being a good roommate, for allowing me time to study, for not, you know, for not putting peer pressure on me when I was trying to practice abstinence and all those things that you were able to, you know, that you look at as a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing.
But was really, man. And then your upbringing, your dad being a pastor,
right.
I think it made you only respect me, you know,
for
the
sure.
more.
No doubt.
And those times, man, I spent some real deep quality, you know, times in that room by myself. Yeah, and I think it helped a whole lot. So that's my that's my story.
I just always felt like, Apostle Dr. Dre, that Lo got called at the wrong time. For my life.
Okay.
Because it just happened. I come in the room one day. He's on his knees crying.
Yes, sir.
I thought we had to go, you know, go fight somebody. Because somebody beat up the bully. Like, whoa, who got Lo? You know? And then what ended up happening was he said, man, I just, you know, confess my call and go here, man. Been on the phone with my dad. We prayed together and about to do it. Why? That's what he said. He called me why in college. About to do it. Why? And I was thinking, I'm not lying. I was really thinking about me. Like, wait. We're dating these twins right now.
Right.
And you had the good one.
Right. What you mean? They're twins, man.
We just reminiscing now. Things are changed. But he had the good one.
Yes, sir.
The one I wanted.
Yes, sir.
And the one that just don't know nothing about church. And so he now just, hey, stop going out, everything.
Wow.
And I was like, we just getting in our.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
right.
We just getting here. You know, finally getting out of mama daddy house. Right. I'm doing me right now.
Right.
And he get the call. So this is what I want to say. And y'all just answered, you know, how you go. When you get that call, what is the feeling? Is it anxiety? Are you nervous? Are you scared? Do you even want it? Do you even want it? I mean, when you really looked at got the call, when you knew, okay, this is what God want me to do, was there any hesitancy? Did you reject? I mean, I know you were saying about 3 years, because you ain't want to do the Me Too thing.
Sure.
But was that the only thing? What did you still want to do it, though?
Yeah. I think what you mentioned, I would say all the above.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, even though it was something, it was even something that I desired because I grew up in that.
Right.
And so I desired it. But that wasn't my drive. And so I think what you mentioned, the anxiety, you know, the fear, the hesitation, all of that, not wanting it. You know, I would be concerned if someone say their call to the gospel and not have some reservations, not have those anxieties, because that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, Paul said, God counted me faithful and put me in the ministry. And so for God to call you, that's you. And if you have no nervousness about
it,
then I think that's you. I'm concerned about it. That's my take on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, Apostle.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
Yeah,
I feel the same exact way. I feel if you don't have some pause, then there's something that's you doing the calling.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I had a whole lot of pause, man, because again, I watched my dad, I watched my uncles, I watched, and I didn't want it initially, but I also could not pull away from it. Mm-hmm. Y'all, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it was a pull
and the gravitation. And, you know, I was, you know, Michael P. Williams. I watched him and, you know, he groomed me well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the pressure, and I mean, this guy is like super intelligent. I'm sure, one of the most intelligent men.
He know the maps in the Bible.
Like,
Mike, he's like that.
I was overwhelmed and felt like, man, I can't do this because I can't speak that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't remember that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll tell you a story. I hate to digress. I'll tell you a story. I'm 18, 19 years old one summer, and he saw something in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving him back and forth to the office because the office wasn't in the church.
Okay.
And we're at the office. He says, well, Lo, you know, give me a couple minutes and I want you to take me to the church. So we get in the chair. He said, remember to get a book. So I got a book, and he sits in the back seat. Y'all watch this. He sits in the back seat of the car, and he takes his book. This book's about this thick, and he speed reads the book. I mean, we're 5 minutes from the church.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not lying.
Yeah. Yeah.
5 minutes from the church, man, he's going through. He's, you know, kind of flipping through. And, and he gets to the end of the book and says, wow, man, that was an exciting book. I say,
Yes.
You talking about just the introduction, the entire book.
Yeah.
And he gets up in the pulpit and kills. Yeah. I mean, just all from the book.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll never be able
to
do that. And so, man, there was some intimidation that I had coming behind individuals like that, man. So I had a whole lot of pause.
What? You got something, Dre? What you about to say?
No, I think they covered it all.
They covered it all? Well, I'm coming to you with this one. So you get the call, because I'm going to come back to that. You get this call to preach, but I'm sitting in front of three pastors. How is that another call? Or what clicks to go from just a minister, and I mean just, but you know, to go from a minister of the gospel to now pastor, you know, with your own congregation.
So for me, I think when people start talking about a call, for me, I think it's a call to what? And so when I was called to youth.
Okay.
And so I knew primarily where God was calling me. And so when I talked about earlier, a series of things that were happening, they were constantly pulling me towards being a youth director, teaching youth, teaching Sunday school for youth. And that was the initial call for me, was a call to take charge and leadership in an area dealing with youth and young adults. And so I did that for probably 15 years.
Yeah.
And then there was another shift. And and the shift for me was the and these other pastors could probably talk about it. There was this area of frustration. It's like a struggle. It's like a pulling. It's like you're not feeling comfortable where you are, and you know you need to go somewhere else.
Okay.
And you're waiting for God to show you where that somewhere else is. And then when he does show you, it started again. For me, everything has always been a series of things happening over and over again. I started being pulled more to adult teaching. I started being pulled more to, hey, you need to go to school. Then I started being pulled more to, hey, you need to get yourself prepared. Hey, you have a shepherd's call on you. You know, you teach like a shepherd. You don't teach like a young adult. And so those kind of things started pulling me and drawing me. And then finally, I started feeling this this restlessness, if you will.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like a restlessness at night. It was a restlessness during the day, during weeks, months, where you were just frustrated in this one particular area.
Holy discontentment.
And then after a while, you felt this contentment in another area. And the other area was the pastoral leadership role. And so as a result of that, man, I just really felt like God, for me, it was, let me back up and say a little word about when we're talking about this fear, as the apostle was talking about. For me, it was a fear of failure. Not measuring up to what I saw so many other guys say, this is what preaching is. This is what the ministry or the call to the ministry is. You need to be this. And I was looking at me saying, I'm not even close to that.
Right.
And so as a result of that, that kind of was gave me pause. Was that, hey, I don't want to be the spotlight to be on me.
Okay.
Because I think in our culture, when you say you called, immediately
there's
a spotlight.
Right. No doubt.
And people want to see are you who you say you are?
Right.
And so I didn't want the spotlight on me because there was a tendency, if you hit me, I'm gonna hit you back. Yeah. I don't care nothing about it. We gonna fight. so that struggle. You say be real.
I'm glad we didn't meet, Dre. I'm glad we didn't meet.
Yeah. So I'm not. I've just went into that.
I done seen him get into with people before.
What?
Oh, what? Always. I'd be like, calm down. It's a foul. Just call foul. He was ready to fight. Okay.
Yeah. So you know. So that's just kind of how I felt about that whole movement. Yeah.
Yeah. Apostle.
Yes, sir.
From preaching in the minutes of the gospel, when did it click or was another call pastor?
Well, you know, I believe it's different steps and different things happen at these different steps. And of course, we know God orders those steps, but I like to say he also determines the pace. Mm-hmm. And so just certain things happen at certain times. So I was with my father, mm-hmm. and then when my father discontinued the church, mm-hmm. and so I ended up, that was a guy named Apostle F.L. Daniels. And so all of these different men of God who were in my life, who were part of those steps, is something I began to gain from them. And so Apostle Daniels, he gave me several opportunities, and he helped groom me and shape me for the pastorage. And then, so from there, I went to South Post Stoke Baptist Church.
Talk about it.
That's where I met Dre.
Okay.
And so that was Pastor Chester Summerfield.
Okay.
And so while I was there, there were some things that I learned from Pastor there.
For sure.
And so there, I was working with the youth. Okay. And so I was youth director, working with the youth and all of that. And then I remember when he left, I think his job took him out of town, mm-hmm. took him out of town. And so from there, Spirit of God told me, okay, now's the time to start.
Gotcha.
And so I started the church from that. This mm-hmm. is in 1990
okay.
when I started this church.
Okay.
That church, then that was another man of God that God brought into my life mm-hmm. during this time. And that was some things I learned from him, groomed mm-hmm. from him. 1990 to 1996, I closed that work down. Mm-hmm. It just didn't pick up traction. It just wasn't doing anything. So I shut it down and joined another church and became an assistant pastor there.
Okay.
Again, getting ready for the pastorage. Some things happened there. The end of it was not favorable. Mm-hmm. But I knew God was calling me to pastor, and right. God gave me from there, God gave me specific instructions on what he wanted me to do. Okay. Go to the Arcola Fresno area, start a church, Word of Restoration, your visions, restoring lives.
Clear.
Yeah. Your visions, restoring lives with the word. And the assignment is to be a mere city, the city of restoration. Hmm. So from there, boom, start Word of Restoration in 2001, but all along, God was getting me ready.
I got you.
He's those different steps.
Mm.
So that's how it happened for me.
Hello.
Yeah, I don't think mine was that clear in terms of.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not.
You know,
it is.
Yeah,
like
there's no cookie cut.
I've heard mm-hmm. you know Apostle's story before, mm-hmm. and you know I admire you know the fact that it was so clear.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paul talks about he desires the place of a bishop, desires a bishop,
yeah.
you know, and so
mm-hmm. sure.
part of the call was I desired.
Yeah.
If I would have been a policeman, I would have been a chief. I'd have been mm-hmm. a fireman, I would have been, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
whatever I was a part of, I always wanted to be the best.
Sure.
And I felt like God, you know, through my life, I was a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basketball team, I was, yeah. you know, captain. And so all of those, and so I wouldn't think that he would put me as a teacher mm-hmm. and then not put me in a place of being a leader.
Mm, okay.
And so I think that kind of came along with being under some of the pastors that, you know,
yeah.
because I went from Michael P. I don't know if you guys know. Then I went to Gary Scott.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And two different styles,
yeah. sure.
two different personalities. Mm-hmm. One's very much charismatic. Mm-hmm. And I learned the pulpit etiquette mm-hmm. behind Gary Scott,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, you know, when and how and what, you know, and so, you know, all of those things. And of course, you know, then Pastor Terrence Johnson,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
the whole administrative piece from,
right.
you know, being behind him. And of course that happened, you know, I was kind of forced in a way, prematurely, to have to kind of pastor. Yeah. Didn't really want to get into it at the time, but it was kind of all I had. Yeah. And I knew that's what he was calling me to, but it wasn't when I wanted to be called to it. So,
sure.
Yeah,
that's kind of the, you know, it took a while for me to catch my footing as a pastor.
You know what I'm saying? A while.
The setup wasn't like yours, Apostle Dre. It wasn't like, you know, where you kind of go into, though I organized the fellowship. Yeah. It was, you know, before it was fellowship, it was, you know, Unity Christian Church.
Right.
And so, man, that was a lot of ups and downs and lifts, you know, to really get myself, you know.
I think for all of us, I think the common you know, ground or grain is a series of investments from other people.
Yes, sir.
Most definitely.
And so for me, I think my preaching call and then, you know, my administrative pastoral arm, there were two different kind of journeys for me.
Yes, sir.
So the preaching, no one ever mentored me in preaching. No one ever took me under their wing and said, do this, do this. And for a long time, I was frustrated about that. Even my predecessor now never sat down with me and said, this is how you preach, at no time. So all of my preaching has come from watching other people on the outside.
You're a good observer, Dad.
So what he did, one day we were talking, and in my frustration, I said to him, I said, Pastor, I said, why haven't you never just... And I've been under some great people. Mm-hmm. I had Harvey Walker. Mm-hmm. I had Chester Southern. Mm-hmm. I had... who else? I had Bishop Rufus Kiles. I had quite a few different people who had different styles, but no one ever just said, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Pulpit etiquette. I had to learn that by watching. So a lot of things that I learned, I learned by watching. No one ever said, do this. Because that old school technique was, you can learn more by watching than them telling you. Yeah. And so that was the system for me. But then the flip side of that, under Dr. Williams, 15 years there, his model was, I'm going to send you to school.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not teaching you nothing. And then finally one day we were sitting down talking and he said to me, he said, you know why I didn't spend time teaching you certain things? He said, because in this ministry where I believe God is going to take the church, you're going to have to spend time with God and he's going to have to craft out who you're going to be. He said, because a lot of guys mimic their predecessors.
Man.
He said they never ever get their genuine personality in preaching.
Own. Wow.
That's right.
So I don't really do a whole lot of things that a lot of guys do per se. A lot of things I just do. This is what
naturally.
This is what naturally. I do. And so I think that has helped me to be able to do my brand of teaching and preaching and administration differently than so many others.
And I think let me just say this, Mark. Because I think that's really good because if I'm just taking everything from the guy ahead of me, if I don't get it just like him, then I feel like I'm failing.
That's right.
When if God called you, then he wants you.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's real good.
So before I ask my last thing about the calling, y'all brought up pulpit etiquette. Yeah. So it's really, should there be a pulpit etiquette? Lord, meaning,
most definitely.
I guess when I'm thinking of pulpit etiquette, I'm thinking of a certain way you may preach, meaning like, you know, you have a narrative preachers, you have expository preaching, you have... you know, three points in a poem.
Topical preachers, all that.
Mm-hmm. But etiquette, that doesn't fall under etiquette?
I think it can. Etiquette is more so, man, knowing what to do at the appropriate times.
Yeah.
Okay. Like at funerals, weddings.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
If all you go somewhere, if you're invited somewhere.
Always do your assignment.
Do what you're asked to do.
Do what you're asked to do. Yeah. Yeah. Because I've seen a bunch of preachers or pastors with horrible funeral etiquette. Yeah. I just want to say that. In my time.
Yeah.
Where the pastor promotes women preachers, ministers, and then you preach a sermon talking against it. That's bad etiquette.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Okay.
It's almost
it
like putting your feet up in somebody's house.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You know, so I would never go to someone's house who teaches, for instance, prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
So if they teach on prosperity, I'm not going to go in teaching against prosperity.
Gotcha.
So you try to, if you've been invited, if they've been gracious enough to invite you in,
yeah,
you ought to follow the rules.
So you're saying when in Rome?
Yeah. You know, to an extent.
I think, yeah, because see, the thing is, see, truth is, because I run into people who will say, well, I'm just going there and tell the truth.
Yeah.
Well, but here's the problem. Yes, you're exactly right. See, that there's a lot of truth.
Yeah.
God is love.
That's right.
Is a truth.
Right.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
You didn't have to go in there and teach that truth.
That's right.
And bring confusion in that house.
I got you.
And okay. So if you can't honor an assignment, don't accept the engagement.
That's, right. That's exactly right.
See what I'm saying?
That's
exactly see what I'm saying?
I got you now.
You see what I'm saying?
I want to end this particular piece. This segment, rather, because for so long, people would tell me, well, when are you going to accept your calling? This is what folks would tell you. Mm-hmm. When are you going to accept your calling? I used to be like, the Lord ain't called me. I mean,
yeah.
And my thing is, I've received a bunch of calls. I kind of feel like, you know, I answer the phones and they done call me down to the office. Like, I would pretty much know if the Lord called me.
Right.
So that's why I was asking you all the how the when and the what, because I think a lot of people, especially in the congregation, we want to be called, not necessarily to the ministry of preaching.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to know what is our calling for our lives.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I used to get frustrated when a pastor would just, see, I know I was called, and they'd be bragging like they were called. And I'd be like, well, you know, good for you. You lucky.
Right.
I ain't been called to preach. I'm trying to find out what I've been called to do. I went to college for radio, TV, film. Here I am, a comic. You understand what I'm saying? But I know that I was called to this, but it was through people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just feel like when folk, you know, I it's a lot of frustration in the pews,
right?
Because it seemed like that your call on your lives was clear,
mm-hmm.
whether you rejected it, ran from it, whatever, it was clear. But for those of us in the pew, it was like, man, I don't know. So what would y'all say, you know, to that?
Well, there's young man in scripture who got called by God, and he needed another person to actually inform him that it was God calling him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On a couple occasions.
Okay. Eli.
You know, and Eli he came back like, are you calling me?
Mm-hmm.
No, go back. Are you calling? He said, no, the next time, I need you to say, God, here am I. And so sometimes you need that other person to help you
for sure
to identify what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? And I think the series of events that we had was having those Elis in our life to kind of identify and clarify what was going on in our life. I will say this, and you guys can jump in on this. If God is calling you, preach, pastor, whatever, you're going to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
It cannot be ignored if he's really calling you. It's not something that you kind of, you know, put on Tuesday and you kind of, you know, it goes away on Thursday. No.
Yeah. I call it an arrest warrant.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go away.
It's pretty persistent, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is.
It is pretty persistent. You can't kick it.
Yeah. You can't.
Yeah. And I think you'd be listening for, like, Apostle say he had the dream, heard the voice. I hear some other people, I heard this voice. I was... Mm-hmm. I got into a car wreck and, you know, being a preacher's kid, I didn't heard
so many stories.
So many different calls.
Right.
But you got to distinguish between the two calls.
Right.
There's a vocational call and then there's a call to ministry.
Okay.
Sure. And I think the two, so for instance, your vocation, that's a call.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a God-ordained call.
Right.
Some people mix up the two.
Okay.
So call to teach.
Yeah.
At Texas Southern, that's a call.
For sure.
That's a vocation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a vocational call, but then there's a ministerial call. You're given discipleship.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. How are you taking what God has given you and using that for your area of discipleship?
Right.
For yourself, family, and others.
Mm.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, let's put it in gear. Let's put it in gear. I'm getting ready to ask you some things. I want to know if you for it, if you reverse against it, if you neutral on it, and if we need to park on it, we'll park. First thing I want to know, and y'all jump in, I want everybody's opinion. Can you resign from preaching? Resign from preaching.
What's the terms now, Park? What's the
you could forward? Are you for resigning? You know, some pastors have resigned. I don't preach no more. I see them on Instagram.
Well, can I
used to preach.
Right.
I don't preach no more. For instance, let me get I was a deacon.
I get you.
I resigned.
Right. I get you.
Deacons are called a pastor.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But I'm just sharing.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I was a deacon. I see people go, hey, Deacon Wiley. No, ma'am.
No more.
I ain't no deacon no more. I resign. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But you've been called to preach by God. But, so I'm asking.
But pastors, watch this. Aren't we all called to proclaim?
We all call.
I don't think you can resign from preaching per se.
Right.
Because we always have to do that.
Okay. Right.
So I don't think you can actually resign. Well, you can.
Yeah, I ain't talking about from pastoring.
Right.
I'm talking about preaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I agree with Lorenzo that when God calls you to preach, and see, first of all, we have our own idea of what that looks like.
For sure.
We're thinking about the church. We're thinking about the pulpit. We're thinking about all that. But there's so many other places, other ways and avenues for you to preach.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can resign from preaching. Now, you could be reassigned in your assignment of getting the gospel out. Like Lo say, we're called to proclaim the gospel. There's no expiration when it comes to preaching the gospel. I want to say it like that. There's no expiration with that proclamation. You got to keep preaching the gospel.
That's what happens when you get deep folk on
and so, I don't see how you can resign from preaching.
From preaching.
Yeah. I don't see that.
Yeah. And I agree 100%. I think the greatest example is Apostle Paul.
Yeah.
You know, much of the epistles, his prison epistles, he is in some ways isolated and he can't necessarily preach verbally, but he puts it pen to paper.
He's preaching by letter.
And he's preaching by letter. Yes. And much of what we know in the prison epistles comes from what he does by letter.
That's right.
You know, so he moves from in the audible preaching to writing, you know, so I think that even unto death, you know, so he does it all the way unto death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good model to follow.
Pastor, should he have a degree? For it, against it, don't matter. Should a pastor have a degree?
I got two views on it, but I'll
yield. Okay.
We'll lead with your view, doctor.
Okay. So I think it's within the context of what your assignment is, because there are some assignments. So I'm degreed, but then if my assignment were in a position where that's not necessary, I think that there ought to be some kind of training or teaching going on continuously. Mm-hmm. You know, A. Lewis Patterson, which is a real popular phrase that he gave, a call to preach is a call to preparation.
Right.
You know, Apostle Paul says, study, show thyself, approve unto God. You know, we know those passages, right?
Yeah.
So the reality is I do think that there is a call to preparation. There's a call to learn. But I also think those things need to be confined to your context.
Right.
The context that I was in, I could not move into a senior pastor role without having a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate from an ATS accredited school.
Okay.
There are some schools that are not ATS accredited or SACS accredited, and it may not have an accreditation to it. So some certain contexts do not see that as a legitimate degree or legitimized degree.
Mm-hmm.
So it just really depends on your context.
Okay.
That's how I would put it.
Okay. Right.
That's just my little view.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great view. And I agree with that. But however, I think a pastor should be trained.
Okay.
That should be a level of training, education, understanding. I think it's important to understand the Bible. You know, sitting to my far left, you know, Lorenzo was very key. Mm-hmm. He was very key.
Okay.
In helping me want to go further and be trained and pursue my doctorate.
Okay.
We were preaching somewhere. I was preaching somewhere, mm-hmm. and Lo was there. Mm-hmm. And Lo said to me, he said, this is after everything was over. He said he don't remember it. He said, I never would have said that to you. So it had to be God. it had to be God.
I had one of the moments. I don't remember this.
He said, man, what were you preaching? Uh-huh. He said, it sounded like heresy. And he had great respect for me. It wasn't none disrespectful.
Right,
But I'm gonna tell you something. It did something for me.
Okay.
It made me think about what I was saying, that I had to research it myself. Yeah. Because a lot of times we can be products of what was passed down to us.
Sure. Yes.
And so from that point on, you know, I wanted to make sure that I had a theological understanding of God and sound doctrine and the word of God, you know. And so because what you say, you know, somebody's going to believe you.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't study to show yourself approved, the Bible goes on to say a workman needed not be ashamed. But watch that, subverting the hearer. Mm-hmm. That word subverting there means ruining lives, mm-hmm. that you can ruin somebody's life because of your lack of training, mm-hmm. and a theological grasp on the word of God. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to be trained. You need to be educated in the Bible, in the word of God, so you can preach sound doctrine. Mm. If not, then you're going to ruin people's lives.
Right. Mm. Wow. These brothers done already said everything need to be said. I'll say this. I don't think school necessarily prepares you for pastoring.
Oh no!
Oh no!
No, okay.
You can get all the education you want. It's more than that.
Yeah, sure.
I think school teaches you how to prepare, how to study, how to research those type of things. Yeah. But you know, if you look at it, man, Paul was probably hands down one of the most declarated, you know, writers of all theologians of our time.
Sure.
You know, spoke several languages. You know, and just very, very educated. But then you see individuals like, you know, John and Peter. Mm-hmm. You know, Bible talks about how they preach with great boldness, mm-hmm. but the Bible also says, and they saw that they were untrained, uneducated men.
Right.
And so there's a lot of use that God can use individuals.
That's right. That's right.
Who are led spiritually.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That's right. The letter killeth, but the spirit makes alive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, Baptist boys say, you know, I wouldn't say Baptist boys, more charismatic guys would say, well, you going to the seminary.
Yeah.
Seminary. And they feel like seminary does something to individuals that keeps them from really tapping into the spiritual realm of pastoring, preaching, so forth and so on. So I think that there has to be a balance.
Okay.
There has to be a balance of both.
Okay.
Training, education, so forth. So.
Yeah.
Last one. For, against, and we're probably going to park. This is the last one. Prosperity preaching.
It's not that difficult. Dre is already, he's locked and loaded.
He's locked and loaded?
Yes, sir. Dre's locked and loaded. He is locked and.
Is he locked and loaded low?
Tech nine. Uzi. Machine gun. All of the above.
Prosperity preaching. You for it, you against it.
I am for it within this context.
Okay, I want to hear the context.
So I think in the New Testament, you know, that is talked, the money's talked about more than anything else.
Yes, sir.
I mean, this is a fact.
Okay.
And so I think, you know, your upbringing has a lot to do with what you believe about prosperity preaching.
For sure.
And so for me, prosperity preaching, if it ceases at financial gain and doesn't deal with a person's spirituality, deals with a person prospering in favor, prospering in life, beyond money, I think that, you know, we miss the context of prosperity. Okay. So for me, you know, when you start talking about prosperity preaching, what are you talking about in general?
Okay.
Are you talking from a general specific, or are you talking about just just speculation about prosperity preaching.
Now, I think he's talking about speculation of because I think most of what we've been exposed to as quote prosperity preaching is centered around wealth, riches, material gain.
For sure.
That's what when I hear prosperity preaching, that's what I hear. Now, I am against and Paul talks about this with Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6. He talks about pulling away and staying away from those who teach and preach that gain is godliness. And when he talks about it in that same context, he talks about how contentment, godliness with contentment is great gain.
That's right.
Now watch this. And Dre here, he knows. And low too. But watch this. Now, godliness with contentment. See, the scripture teaches us to be content with whatever we have. So I have to come to a place of contentment with what I have, whatever it is, whether it's little or whatever. He says that's great gain. That word great there means large. The person who has and they're content with what they have, according to the scripture, they're living large. But see, that's not the way the world sees it.
For sure.
The way the world sees it, the more you have, now he living large.
He living, right.
But God says, whatever you have, if you're content with it, that's large living. And so now Paul further down, he says then, he says now, that if you don't get this right, if you're running after material gain and wealth and prosperity and all of that, he says it's going to cause you to err from the faith. You're going to get away from sound doctrine. And what I've seen over the years is that the preaching that I've heard and what I've seen many Christians do, it has caused them to stray from sound doctrine. And see, whenever your doctrine is off, your relationship with God's going to be off. If your relationship with God's going to be off, your faith is going to be off. Now you're expecting God to do something he never told you he would do for you. And people end up drowning in their sorrows because I thought I was going to have one of them that you have. I was going to get one of them. You know, I've been here 6 months. I believe in God too. And watch this. And for many Christians, their call to come to Christ is that you see what I'm driving?
That's right.
Need to come on to the Lord. You know, you see where I'm living, and then they come to the Lord, and they still in their apartment. Man, I went to the Lord. And, I mean, that's what I've said.
I agree. I totally agree. There's so many cautions about riches in the Bible.
There's a lot.
You know what I'm saying? Like warnings. Do not make sure. You know, and I think, you know, if we look at one of those stories in the scripture where I believe it was Jesus talking about, you know, how hard it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. And his disciples are like, well, Lord, who can enter in? Like, you know, like this is like a tough thing. And so I think that there has to be a level of understanding of what prosperity is. You know, is this spiritual? Is it physical? Is it, you know, economical? What type? And I think that we can teach prosperity on so many different levels. Outside of money. You know what I'm saying? Outside of money. We're all going to leave an inheritance. But what type of inheritance are we talking about? Is it money? So I think that we have to look at it from a broader spectrum.
And I think, you know, I wanted to bring that up, you know, as we close. I wanted to bring that up because I think Apostle, you know, that's my pastor, I think he do a fantastic job of that. You know, we talk about prosperity on every level. But I want to end with this tonight. Do y'all remember a couple of years ago when this would be considered, I'm finna give you some keys. Y'all remember a couple of years ago when I think it was Dr. Creflo Dollar. He went viral because he wanted a jet. He wanted a new jet. He already had one, and he wanted another one. And I don't want to mess up the story, but to my knowledge, he was kind of letting the folk know, hey, I need a new jet. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You know, let's do it. He wasn't hiding or nothing. You know, I need y'all to help me get this new thing. And I remember at my barbershop, because at my barbershop, anything Christian that happened, they looking at me.
Oh, yeah.
What's up with your boy Creflo? You know, this is what I'm hearing. What's up? Your boy want another jet. Oh, I mean, they just going in, right? And so, you know, because they was coming at him, but talking to me, I almost wavered. I was like, hey, Creflo, I mean, I already got a jet, man. I ain't want another one. I mean, I don't even know the store. But how the Lord had it. I was in Orlando, Florida, and I was doing this church. Watch this. I was doing this church.
Oh, my goodness.
And the pastor got a church in Orlando and Jersey. So I'm doing one service in Orlando at 6 on a Saturday. We fly first thing. We fly the last flight Saturday to get there to do all his services Sunday. Bad weather. Everybody get the text. No flights. Everything canceled. So I'm thinking, oh,
wait a minute.
I got to get there. I got to get the rest of this money. this cannot mess up. This cannot mess up my money. We go get there. But anyway, I was like, oh, man, I ain't going to be able to go. So anyway, they was chilling. They was like, hey, go back to the hotel. We'll call you, let you know what we're going to do. So they called me about 1 in the morning and said, yeah, be ready. They're going to send a car to get you at about 5:30. We're going to leave at 6. I said, 6? 5:30? I said, I'm 20 minutes from the airport. I got to get through the, you know, TSA, right. Everything. I'm like, we ain't going to make it. I said, oh, man, the folk picked me up. We passed that airport. I saw us pass. I was like, they go to the airport entry right there. But we passed that. Went into this gate where they opened that gate, man. Pulled up to that jet. I said, no. I said, no. I could have brought my bottles, my knives, my guns. Look at that. Because ain't no TSA out here. And, man, when I tell you, we got on that jet and shot to Jersey in about an hour.
Yeah.
A little bit over an hour. Smooth ride, everything. His folk picked us up. And I said, Dr. Dollar, I want to apologize. Because I believe if everybody who talking crazy
could experience
this, they would not be talking no more.
Right.
Because as a comedian, I'd be wishing something I could just get back. Just come back. I don't want to have to wait.
Right.
And all of those type of stuff. But anyway, that's how I went in. Man, thank y'all so much. How can they follow you, keep up with your churches and everything?
Instagram, Facebook, thefellowshipoflove.org is the best way to get in touch with us. Look us up on Instagram, Facebook.
Newfaithchurch.org. And they can find us on Instagram or Facebook.
Same thing, WRIC.org.
Appreciate you guys.
Oh, man.
All right. Thank you, man.
All right. Pleasure, man.